You're listening to the Radio Cafe on the Santa Fe New Mexican. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. We're going to be talking to the authors of a new book, which is all about helping counties to provide the services that New Mexicans desperately need. But first, we want to let you know that this podcast is made possible by the generous support of Thornburg Investment Management, which also supports subscription-free access to local COVID-19 reporting by the Santa Fe New Mexican at santafenewmexican.com/coronavirus. I'd like now to welcome Catherine Ortega Courtney and Dominic Capello. They are co-directors of the Anna Age 8 Institute, and they are authors of the new book, 100% Community, Ensuring 10 Vital Services for Surviving and Thriving. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is a book that's very much an action-oriented document. You have a vision for New Mexico that could also extend to the whole country of a system in which all people, not just half of people or 75% of people, but really everybody has access to the services they need to survive and thrive. First of all, how did you come to write this book?
Well, this book started basically from our time working for the Child Welfare Department of New Mexico, Children, Youth, and Families Department, when we kind of started digging into the root causes of child abuse and child maltreatment and neglect, and realized a lot of the problems had to do with the lack of services in the communities. It was basically a system set up to refer people to services without a system to ensure that the services existed or were of quality. So we wrote our first book, Anna Age 8, sort of as a call to action around childhood trauma, child abuse, and maltreatment. And one of the recommendations we made in that book was that there's basically 10 vital services that people need in order to both survive and thrive. So things like child abuse rates would go down, school outcomes would be better, crime would go down, and things like that. What we didn't do in Anna Age 8 was really describe how to make that happen. And that's what 100% Community is.
You list some of the challenges that we face as a country over the last generation, like diseases like HIV/AIDS and other epidemics, and Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, the financial crisis, the opioid epidemic. Now we have COVID-19. These are all events that in different ways have not only been horrific in themselves, but they've really shown us our own weaknesses in responding to disasters, to crises. Give us some examples of what this actually looks like.
You know, I was living in the middle of San Francisco at the epicenter of the AIDS epidemic. And this was before there was an HIV test. So I was living in a society that was terrified of a virus. And what I saw was confusion, fear. I saw people who were suggesting that people be sent away to live in, I guess you could call them, camps. Now, the flip side of that was incredible compassion and people saying, we've got to come together. We have to get our systems working so that everyone feels safe. I think that helped me think more deeply about how to approach the problem we face now, which is not just COVID-19, but also the economic freefall.
Dominic, you spoke about compassion. And as I was reading your work, I was thinking about how compassion is a necessary but insufficient condition for change, because it requires not only compassion, but real systems thinking, which is kind of what this is all about.
Yeah, it really requires critical thinking. So we have to first ask, if 30% of a county are saying they cannot access medical care, we have to ask why. How long has that been a problem here? What's the root cause? So you're right. We need compassion. We need critical thinking. And I guess the other C word would be creativity. We have to come together and say, how do we fix this problem? And I should add that, you know, with our book, we're not saying just fix one sector. Our whole idea is that if you don't fix all 10, they're dependent on one another. They're interrelated. And what we learned when people said they couldn't access medical care, one of the reasons is transportation. So suddenly the transportation sector and the medical sector have a relationship.
The 10 sectors that that you're referring to, you break them down into sort of five and five. The five necessary elements for surviving are housing, food, mental health care, medical and dental care, and as you say, transportation. And then for thriving, you need support for parents and early childhood learning programs and schools with school-based health care and youth mentors and job training and education. And those are all things that in the long term build up communities. These are all long-term issues, and the lack of those services for many people, especially at the lower end of the economic spectrum, I mean, it's been a long time that these things have been in short supply. How do you go about, first of all, assessing what the problems are in any given region? What scale of region are we talking about? So how do you go about doing that?
So we start at the county level, and the reason we pick county is because we are serious about 100% of people being able to access. So that means if we looked at a city, we'd be leaving people out. So once we have a county that we're working with, one of the first steps that we do is our 100% community survey. So once we have that, what we have is real data. So the people working in the counties can really zoom in on, you know, oh, people are struggling to access food in this corner of this county. How do we build that up? You can't address a problem unless you understand what the problem is. And we know that it definitely varies from county to county. So the problems in Rio Arriba are not the same as the ones in Doña Ana County.
What are some of the things that you're actually seeing on a county by county basis?
It's interesting, and some of it has been surprising. We're getting ready to release a report on the Rio Arriba County data. And one of the data points that surprised us was that 66% of the people who needed housing services had difficulty accessing it. 66%. Another one that kind of surprised us was that 48% of people who answered the survey in Rio Arriba said that they needed food assistance. And that was also higher than we expected.
Once they have that information, I mean, so many agencies, whether they be municipal or county or state level or whatever, are hurting for funding, have staffs that are overstressed, and so on. So then you get this information. What do you do with it?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I think what we need to understand is that everything we've done thus far has led us to where we are today. So we have to ask, how is it that what we've done have led us to such disparities? And if we can have these courageous conversations in every agency, then we can say, you know what, we need new ways of working, new ways of collaborating. You know, how do we get bureaucracies to stop and ask, how are we doing? And it's possible to do that.
So you're saying you have to have these courageous conversations. You have to look at yourselves and assess and say, what are we doing wrong? Have you been in those meetings? Has that actually happened? And what is the result of it?
You know, it's really interesting because it doesn't display itself as people saying, oh my gosh, wow, we need to do some self-examination. What tends to happen is people start resisting change. It's a really interesting thing, and that's why we love the framework of adaptive leadership, because it gives us the tools to understand, okay, if somebody's all of a sudden starting to resist change or be kind of rude and weird all of a sudden, it's most likely because they're afraid. So you kind of have to pull people through this almost change process. The people who are sort of early adopters, and luckily for us, those are the people that we tend to get to work with, are the ones who are excited about change. But it is not an easy process to get people to be okay with change.
Right. So yeah, I mean, I want to get back to, because we're looking at really long-term problems in the context of crisis. So you've got already, long before COVID, you've got lack of, as you gave the example, access to medical care because of lack of transportation. You've got food deserts and problems getting access to, you know, good and fresh and healthy food. You've got so many things that are just exacerbated during a crisis. So what do you do during a crisis? Like, what is your work at this time?
Well, the interesting thing is our framework unbeknownst to us, was kind of perfectly positioned for this crisis. Our emphasis on access to the 10 services wasn't designed in any way, shape, or form to address a pandemic when we came up with it 3 years ago. But I think it just becomes even more urgent now. And what we're seeing is, in some ways, it activates people. So instead of waiting around for people to come around to the idea of, yeah, addressing childhood trauma is important, and yeah, people should probably have access to food, now it's like, people need access to food right now, today. How can we make that happen today? And so we've seen people kind of coming together in new ways. In some ways, they can make things happen faster than they can in normal times. So our work becomes even more urgent and sort of timely.
Tell us some stories about actual counties where you are working during this COVID crisis, what you're doing, how it's making a difference.
Well, in San Miguel County, I think we should start with just an email introduction to Matt Probst, who is the medical director of El Centro Family Health Clinics, 20 clinics in northern New Mexico. And it started there with him saying, I know about the book, I know about what you're doing, so what do I do? And we said to him, well, we have a little 500-page book that you really need to read first. And we thought we may never hear from him again, or it would take maybe half a year. And in 2 weeks, he emails back and says, I had a flight to New York and back, and I read the entire book. Then he said, all right, now what do I do? And I said, well, you really need to identify at least one or two leaders in each of the 10 sectors willing to be action team leaders, willing to give at least 8 hours a week. And he said, okay. And I thought, we won't hear from him for 3 or 6 months. But in about 2 weeks, he sent me an email with all the bios of all the action team leaders. And I'm talking people pretty high up the food chain. So he had been able to activate and get the commitments of leaders throughout San Miguel. So this itself is unprecedented. And then he said, now that I've got all of them, what do I do? And I said, well, you really should have a book club and take everybody through the book together and answer all the questions at the end of each part. And he goes, I can organize that. I mean, how often do you hear that 100 people in New Mexico read a 500-page book and discussed it and then talked about how do we turn these ideas into action steps? So I think what we've got going here is something very unique and very exciting.
And so then what? I mean, I love the story of, okay, I read it, now what? Okay, now I've assembled my team, now what? Still, you're a step away or some number of steps away from actually serving the people who are in trouble.
All right, well, let's continue on. The story continues. We've been developing the survey for them. But in the meantime, I said, well, you know, you might want to look at all the services in your county that provide the 10 services for surviving and thriving. And so he said, we can do that. So he talked to each team, like he Zooms with the food team and says, your assignment for the next week is identify everyone in this county who is addressing food insecurity. So suddenly he had 10 teams all looking at what do we currently have. And within 2 weeks, he sent us 10 lists of all the services. And within another week, he had pulled together an entire online directory. So everyone in San Miguel County can now see what are the latest services. And then the hard work, the really hard work starts. And I think that's what you're getting at, which is now what do we do? Well, in the instance of food security, you could say, well, if we have 6 agencies and they can only provide food a few hours a day, 6 days a week, how do we increase that? Do they need more funding? Do they need to work differently? Do we need to go to the state and make the case? These are the things you have to do sector by sector and agency by agency, because ultimately in every sector, the question is the service available and what's the quality of the service? One other thing I'd like to add is technology, because we were all forced 2 months ago to all start working remote and use technology really effectively. So we now know that we can use technology. For example, in the sector of behavioral health care, it's always been, well, we have to get more therapists moving to our county. We need them to move in. Well, do we? Can't we use online therapy? Now, yes. Do we have to address the digital divide and make sure everyone has access to Wi-Fi? Yes, we do. But once we do that, if you think of the 10 sectors, we could brainstorm each one and talk, how does technology improve this? Even medical care. Think how many assessments, initial assessments and screenings can be done with video conferencing before you have to come into the office. And I could take you through all 10 sectors.
So to what extent is this work relevant to, for lack of a better word, civilians? In other words, just people who live in neighborhoods and who are not involved in county government or working at health clinics or really directly involved in these infrastructures you're talking about?
Well, relevant, I mean, it's hugely relevant to people because our goal is to help everybody and make sure 100% of people have access to these services. But I think we've also seen some community members become very activated. We have someone in Otero County who read Anna Age 8 and took it upon herself to start buying copies of the book and give them to all elected officials in her county and other decision makers, and just advocating that this is something this county needs to do. So I think there really is a role for everybody if they're interested. We talk about these 10 action teams, and it does help to have leaders who are actively working for those sectors, but people who are just interested in helping are always welcome in these community meetings, and there's always a role for them as well. It is a community-wide effort, and we've seen in San Miguel, I think one of the reasons it's so successful there is because they have managed to engage a large portion of their community in many different ways.
What are some of those ways?
Well, I think there's definitely people who are on certain task forces that are just kind of like, I'm not executive director of an organization, but I can certainly volunteer and hand out free lunches. Students, youth, there's room for everybody. And I think they've done a really good job in San Miguel of almost building in a mentorship program into the initiative itself, where they've involved youth to be sort of co-leaders of the different action teams. And so it's a learning experience for the youth, as well as getting to work closely with people who are kind of high up in these sectors. So there's lots of room for everyone.
There's a great story from San Miguel, and there were some women that came forward that said, you know, we know how to sew, and we know that people need masks, especially our business people who are going to be opening up soon need masks. And when their clients come in and they don't have a mask, it'd be great to offer them a mask. So why don't we organize a bunch of us as a sewing collective? We can get together and we can sew masks.
It strikes me as we talk and as we look at these tremendous deficiencies in services, especially in some of the poorest counties of New Mexico, but even in some of the wealthiest counties of New Mexico, there's a great deal of inequity. And this is all happening against a backdrop of national and international wealth inequality and really hoarding of wealth by the people at the very top of that pyramid. How do you think about that, which is certainly beyond the control of New Mexico county officials and ordinary citizens living in neighborhoods, but how do you factor that in?
Well, I think these are interesting questions, but ultimately, when you do that 100% community, you're really in a different mindset. It's a different kind of vision. It's, you know, there's enough for everybody. There really is. We can make sure in every county in New Mexico that everyone has access to these services. This does not need to take a decade. As a matter of fact, if we got everyone on board after this radio show, we would start seeing enormous strides in every county within months.
And I'd just add, one of the things that we really emphasize is getting to know your local lawmakers, getting to understand the importance of that, because the truth is that your local lawmakers have a bigger impact on your day-to-day life than the national ones. They really do. I didn't know until a few years ago the impact of county commissioners and city councilors and school board members. But now that I know it, I really feel like it's important to make sure that everyone pays attention to that and votes.
You know, another thing that cities do across the nation, actually across the world, is that sometimes they look at luxury items and they tax them. They can tax alcohol, they can tax cigarettes, they can tax marijuana, they can tax hotels. I think Denver is a really good example of a city that taxed marijuana and brought in all kinds of resources that they funneled into education projects. So we don't lack for opportunities to raise revenue in ways that feel fair and make sense to people. We can solve any problem that we're facing.
So basically, the two of you are ready, willing, and able to work. If somebody, let's say, is listening to this from a county, maybe they're a county commissioner, or maybe they're working with a school there or whatever, and say, hey, we need to do something in our county. Will you help us do it? You are available for that.
Absolutely. Our institute is basically set up to support the state, any county in the state that wants to join our initiative. We don't have any funding to give to the counties, but we are funded to have us, you know, basically give technical assistance to the counties and support them in the ways we described, with, you know, helping them figure out what are the next steps, what are they going to do, do you need a website, do you need communications help. So we're able to support pretty much any county in that way. We were originally funded to work in 3 counties, and now we're working at some level with probably 8 to 9 counties and a Pueblo.
I should also add that another service we can offer in terms of technical assistance is identifying where funding exists. I mean, we want our counties to be self-sufficient. We want our counties to see themselves almost as a country. We are the Republic of Otero, you know, and we support ourselves. We have the revenue, and this means proposal writing. And whether you're writing a proposal to your state lawmaker or to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, to Oprah's Foundation, there's lots of philanthropy. And of course, there are lots of government agencies, but they can't respond to a county unless there is a proposal. There has to be a well-articulated vision, a good budget, a good timeline, a good team. And we can help every county with that. And we're eager to help. And if you go to our website, you can just click on New Mexico Leaders and you'll see a map of New Mexico. You can click on every county and that will show you who are your elected leaders. And these are people you should be reaching out to immediately, building relationships, dialogue, communication, sharing a copy of the book or a mini book, and begin a conversation today about getting to solutions.
Catherine Ortega Courtney and Dominic Capello are co-directors of the Anna Age 8 Institute. They can be found on the web at annaage8.org. That's annaageight.org. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.